The Trials of Apollo, The Tyrant's Tomb, Chapter 21. See this right here, kids? This is how you don't do it. Questions? Class dismissed. How's the wound? Hazel asked. I knew she meant well, but I was getting very tired of that question and even more tired of the wound.
Hi, I'm Ava.
I'm Neve.
And I'm Brayden.
And this is Return to Camp Half-Blood, the English class that you always wanted.
Where we analyze the Percy Jackson and Heroes of Olympus books through a new theme every week.
Ava, Neve, how are we doing this week?
I'm good. I'm doing pretty well. This week is going to be weird, and I know it, and I'm just trying to prepare myself for that because it's kind of like a week, like a limbo week before I start one of my new jobs. And then also, like, the show that I'm in right now, like, we're open and we're running, and, like, I don't have to be there every night this week, which is weird and feels crazy. So I'm like, what do I do with all this time? I think my roommate and I are going to go on a bunch of apartment tours because we're looking to get out of this basement as soon as we possibly can. Basement apartment that we found on Craigslist. Amazing.
Very happy for you to get out of the basement.
Extremely cute. Oh my God. Also huge news. My roommate is adopting another cat and we're going to pick it up tomorrow.
Cats?
Yeah, we're going to
live in your dream now.
I am living my dream. So that probably means that I'm probably not going to get a cat. Like,
that's three cats is a lot.
Three cats is a lot. And frankly, I'm good with just two. This new cat is, his foster family calls him Frappuccino, but which is adorable, but it's long. And my roommate's like, I think it should be Cheddar. And so we're renaming him Cheddar. And
oh, I would have shortened it to Al Pacino.
Oh, that's funny.
I think that's a really funny cat name.
And also because of where we live. Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah, so his name is going to be Cheddar. And also it makes sense just because he looks funny. Like, he's one of those cats that has just like a stupid face. I love it so much and I'm so excited. But yeah, it's going to be a weird, like, limbo week, but we're going to have another cat in the house, so it'll be fine. How about you, Neo? How are you?
I got to be honest, guys, I really did it to myself this week. I am really tired. I don't know why I thought it would be a really great idea to have tech week, because this past week was our tech week. So I was at the theater till I didn't get home till like 11 every night. And then on Friday morning, we had our preview on Thursday. Then on Friday morning, I opened the restaurant. So I went at 7:30 to my job, then worked a full shift, then spent my one free hour out instead of going home and like taking a fucking breather. And then I did the show for opening night, went out after opening night, woke up on Saturday morning, worked brunch, worked an entire brunch shift. Then Saturday, my parents came to visit. So then I had to like be with them in between my brunch shift and my call time, did my call time, went to the show. Then we lost an hour. And then I woke up to do the matinee today and say goodbye to my parents. And now I'm here and I have just been like, why did I do all of that and make myself so tired? And it was all things that like, I'm glad I did because like I was able, like, you know, an hourly employee working at a restaurant, like I need those hours in. So I'm glad I didn't give up any of my shifts, but I am tired. But all with good things, the show opened and people laughed. Phew. with a little bit of new work going to. But no, people have been really liking it. We were on the local news. We were on 6ABC Philadelphia. If anyone was watching 6ABC Philadelphia last night around 7:15, you saw me and other people in the B-roll. They did not interview me for the segment, but they did interview other people. And yeah, I'm excited for the next weekend of shows. I'm excited. Tomorrow night and Tuesday to take a little breather and not do all of those things in a row like I did. How are you, Brayden?
I'm also tired, but good. I am in rehearsal for a show, looking at all theater professionals doing our theater, being hired. And that's how it is.
Exhausted.
But yeah, being in the basement of an old theater for 9 hours a day, plus, I don't know if it was seasonal allergies kicked in this week because it was spring or a cold or a combination of both. I think it's a combination of both because I'm hearing from a lot of people that they're like this week with the temperatures went up and it got crazy.
Girl, it snowed today.
It snowed today though too. So who
what
fucking knows?
For like 2 minutes,
it was 45 and snowing. And it was literally like fucking like in it almost 70 the other day. Who knows?
I miss the East Coast.
I know. It's
bizarro.
It's crazy. But like, other than that, I'm good. Besides, I've just been tired because I've been sick and working a lot. But we just watched the Oscars and that was fun. Great showing for Poor Things. I did finally watch Oppenheimer yesterday because I was like, I have to see it before the Oscars. And I was like, it is good. It's not I'm given the impression by a lot of people hyping it up that like maybe they've never seen a good movie before. Like,
yes.
It's a great movie, but like, it's not the only great movie. Like, it's just one of many good movies. And so that's my thing about it.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
That's what my mom says.
Yeah. I'm glad that we're in the same camp. Well, welcome back to Return to Camp Half-Blood. This week, we're discussing the Tyrant's Tomb, chapters 21 through 24, through the theme of introspection. And we have with us an incredible guest. You know her. You love Darian from the Muses of Mythology podcast is here today. Darian, do you want to introduce yourself if they are silly and crazy and don't know who you are?
It would be rather perplexing because it would imply that they are just listening to your podcast out of order. All right. No judgment. Maybe this is your first episode because you just heard about it and you're trying to get a sample size. Like, totally. But, like, this is a very specific dose chapter by chapter. And most of the fan base has not read the Trials books, I would say, in comparison to the others. So it is if you, dear listener, are brand new, it is a wild place for you to start. Just like this is a wild way for me, a total stranger, to introduce herself by shaming potential new listeners.
We love it.
Hi, hello. I'm Darian. I'm from the Muse of Mythology podcast.
Amazing.
Thank you for being here. We always love to have you on. And of course, in the tradition of having a guest, we do have to punish you a little bit, and you will have 30 seconds to recount what happened in these four chapters.
I'd love to.
Time down.
All right.
Let me know when you're ready.
3, 2, 1. Go.
We're probably all going to die tomorrow. Thank goodness Apollo got some of his godly steel back just in time and teach archery. That's all pretty much hopeless because Lavinia and the nature spirits are getting ready to do something, probably skip town. Fortunately, we've still got Reyna joining Apollo and Meg on their mission to the Sutro Tower, and Apollo isn't going to let something as simple as a zombie rune that's slowly corroding him from the inside out stop him from taking the opportunity to offer to be Reyna's boyfriend. She laughs right in his face, and it's healing for everybody.
Oh, wow. You have like 5 seconds left. Anything else you want to add?
No. No, I wrote that out with more
progress.
I was listening to the last episode and remembered you do this and wrote this whilst I was reading the chapter.
Oh, fair.
And practiced.
It was beautiful.
And
that was one of our best summaries I think we've ever had.
I'd say that's top tier.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I like to come in prepared.
Yeah.
I want to make a good impression, even though I just shamed a bunch of us.
No, we got it.
Exactly. What songs did we bring this week for the Tyrant's Tomb playlist? Yeah, I'll just hop right in there. I was very struck in these chapters by a lot of things, but by the environmental rally.
True.
I thought icons. I was really happy that this through line is still there. This like This is a side tangent. It's coming back. Don't worry. We've talked a lot about how Heroes of Olympus was a really failed environmental metaphor that was like an attempt for the like bipartisan come together to stop global warming. Didn't work. I think Trials of Apollo is doing something related to global warming that is much more nuanced and throws away that bullshit bipartisan thing by just framing the triumvirate as like the evil corporate and lobbyist terrors that they are. So I've really been enjoying the environmental through line. And I picked Fallen Fruit by Lorde. Because I actually thought the way that Lorde describes the song herself really summed it up well. Crushed flower power lament for the spoiled Eden in her generation inherited. I stumbled through that, but like it is great.
Yeah. Ouch, brother. But like, yeah, like it works. Yeah, so mine is not the most on topic, but I've been listening to it a lot and I was like, I want to find a way to rationalize it. And I think I have. So I chose Bags by Clairo because I've been on that album kick real hard recently. It's just a great rainy day album, you know what I mean? So this is probably a song that I would associate with Apollo's confession, I guess, towards Reyna, if I liked Apollo a little more and if I liked Reyna a lot less. So putting it on the playlist to give too much grace to someone who just asked out my favorite character.
Real. Yeah.
I literally was guns blazing, though, reading that. We'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there. I'm sure we all have a lot of feelings.
Going off of that, I chose off the new Bleachers album. Yes, it's so good. Please listen to the new Bleachers album.
That was such a soft plea in a way that like feels like
so.
No, but it feels really more genuine than like you.
Yeah,
like, I got someone to listen to it
because it's just so the lyrics. It really feels because do you know I'm coming out and saying that I really love the
Mean last is coming out.
No, you're not. But I am saying that I did really, really enjoy the last 1975 album. And then Healy was like actually the worst person alive. So now we can't, like, I can't even listen to it without feeling like icky. Like, truly cannot separate the art from the artist.
Same problem.
This Bleachers album came out, and it reminded me that the only thing that made that album good was Jack Antonoff. Like, it was only his, like, addition to the band's sound that, like, made it great. So if you, as well, need something to fill that hole in your heart, this new Bleachers album is everything you need it to be. It's so good. So beautiful. And I'm choosing Jesus is Dead off the album. It's a real fun tune. It's really good.
It is.
Yeah. Like, genuinely, it's like upbeat. But yeah, I think that the like repeated refrain of like is tell them to grease the wheels, pull the arrow back, start the appeal. I'm not the man who sold the world. I think is a cool refrain for this. Also, there's a lyric in a second verse of a teenage girl just sized me up. It's something I don't want to discuss. And I was like, oh my God. So yeah, listen to the whole album, but that song is a real good one. I can't believe it wasn't a single, frankly. Like, I can't believe it wasn't released before because it's so good.
It's a lyric masterpiece, like the whole album. Like, the production's great, but like the lyrics.
And the like the jazz inspired little like dance breaks in so many of the songs, they're so good.
This is gonna sound crazy. But
so excited.
I think Jack Antonoff is the modern day Billy Joel.
And I agree. And the best thing about Jack Antonoff is he says, my best ideas, they're for me only. Like, the pop girls get good stuff, but his, like, true good music, he only lets Bleachers as a, like, as a recording artist, which I respect so much.
Glad you mentioned that we don't do 1975 anymore, because I definitely almost pulled up one of their songs. And I was like, well, I'm like, this song will work. No, never mind. Okay. Keep searching. Keep searching. No,
so unfortunate.
Abort.
I love them. I love them so much.
I also really loved the 1975. And then Matty Healy went off a cliff.
Literally, why'd he have to do that? It's exhausting. There's so many 1975 songs on our past.
Oh, yeah. 1975 is featured
a lot. It's pretty much all we.
No,
yeah, you contributed
to that too.
Yeah.
So I've been listening to the Hazbin Hotel soundtrack exclusively for the last month or so. So
I love that.
Could not try. I was frantically Googling to find something and.
No, it's so good. That's art.
Great things.
I will say, I have not finished Hazbin Hotel.
It's only 8 episodes.
I know.
Avengers Endgame.
I know. And I will put the asterisk on this with I have not finished a single show I've been watching in the past 2 months that's not reality TV. I have not finished Hazbin Hotel. I have not finished Avatar. I have not finished Mr. and Mrs. Smith. To be fair to Mr. and Mrs. Smith, I only started that this week. But I don't know what's wrong with me. I haven't been able to like watch TV shows for some reason. I don't know why that.
This can
is it neurodivergence, perhaps?
Yeah, it is certainly it's something.
Illness.
Yeah, it is something
too.
Yeah, I know. It's something with that where it's like reality TV is fine, and I can watch a movie because a movie is like a limited time, but like a series is feeling really daunting at the moment. All the like other creative stuff I'm working on outside, sometimes you just need to just like not
brain
think.
Off, yeah.
Yeah.
No, exactly. That's why I love reality TV. One thing about it.
I love
Raiders finale. Girl,
I haven't watched.
It was 12 midnight. I literally screamed in our apartment because of how crazy it got.
I'm literally
getting my natural reaction. I had.
I haven't seen it, and I'm so.
Wow. Then we're doing a branch off Return to Camp, just the Traitors recap podcast.
Where
all the people who don't give a shit about the Traitors, and the people who care can go put their own thoughts somewhere else.
Oh my God. But I did start Game of Thrones, which is huge.
Hi.
Oh, because I know that I will love it. It's one of those. It's one of those things that like I know about myself that if I get into this thing, it will become my entire brain for a good 2 months.
Let's
just reference Walking Dead, your last episode. You're referencing Game of Thrones now. Shout out Supernatural in the next one, and I think you've got the complete past of Prime once Prime TV bingo.
Right,
yeah.
Like 2014.
Yeah.
Somehow Supernatural, I think, missed all of us, which is crazy.
Does people for real?
Consider all of our other interests.
Yeah,
like
narrow miss.
Narrow. Really outing myself as a weird kid in this one. Okay, so the reason I was having a trouble finding a song is because I wanted to give one to Reyna, because that's why I asked to be on for this episode. And I couldn't. So since I can only think of Hazbin Hotel songs, Apollo gets Loser Baby, because I think he needs that from someone just to, and I think he's actually starting to embrace that element of he is pathetic. And
yeah.
He's better off when he embraces it.
I agree, and I have much more to say along the lines of that that I think we'll get into when we talk about the theme. But for now, what were our favorite moments of these chapters?
Well, I can tell you a least favorite moment. What's Peaches doing here?
I know! We can have this conversation.
What? Literally, I think we summoned Peaches, because it wasn't it the past episode or like the second.
It was a week or two ago. We're like,
we
haven't seen Peaches in a minute.
He's gone,
and
like, and thank fucking God that weird ass baby is gone.
I cannot emphasize enough how much ever since I was enlightened to the existence of this character that it is haunted by dreams.
Yeah, yeah.
Nightmarish. Mm-hmm. But I did like most of the rest of the chapter. I actually liked the scene with Peaches. I actually thought Peaches was used very well. I don't like Peaches.
Yeah.
It scares me. But I can admit that things that scare me aren't bad, necessarily.
I don't think Rick Riordan likes Peaches either.
Yeah, I agree.
He pulled this creature out as soon as he could justify doing so.
Yeah. I think he's scared of his creation.
Yeah, it does. Like, oh no, what have I done? But he was too big of a character in that first book to just disappear.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just phase him out and then just be like, the wildfires, don't worry about it anymore. He's gone.
This was a small thing that I really loved about these chapters. The detail of Lavinia and her Mana Ballista with like the archery lesson, and she was like actually basically pulls out the closest to a gun that Ryan can get away with. And she just like and shoots someone point blank, basically, is exactly what happens in the most like child-friendly way possible. And it was incredible. I love her energy. It's chaotic and scary and sounds like a lot of girls I've been rivals with. Love that.
Yeah, she's fierce.
Other favorite moments of the chapter?
I loved Aurum and Argentum's presence in the last. They were hilarious, giving me everything I needed as I was dealing with absolutely guns blazing, ready to hit a pole. But yeah, no, they were hilarious. I love the way Rick wrote them and their attitude.
That we know Hazel's learning how to drive. That's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There were just, like, a lot of these, like, really nice, like, sidebars that I think just built the world more. I think that's something he's been doing very well in this book, which is a weird choice for book four in this series to, like, have so many, like, little tangent world-building things just for at this moment of Apollo's story. But I do appreciate them. Like, as a fan of the world he built, I like the world building of it. It is a little... This book might be too long. Like, there's just so much fluff. Not these chapters particularly. These chapters did move stuff forward. But, like, overall, this book has been so incredibly slow.
Yes. Yeah. We take our time.
Read these chapters this morning and I was like, oh yeah, it's at this point that I think this point on is some of my favorite Rick Riordan stuff, just to the end of the book. I think it's, that's what I was, I'll be, I think everything that going forward is just really cool and really tight. And I was also like, looking at how far the book is, I'm like, what happened before this? How is this not earlier in the book?
Yeah.
We do a lot of nonsense earlier in the book, don't we?
Yeah, it's like, this is about 2/3 of the way through this book. Stuff starts happening.
Yeah.
But hey.
This whole series.
Oh. I'm enjoying the stuff that's happening now. So, yeah. Forgive it.
And then just tagging on the elements of it expanding the world. Like, I think this one does it really well. But I think even in the prior ones, I feel like this book is so much about demonstrating that the world exists when we, the readers, are not present. That things are going to happen to these characters, that they're going to have experiences and make decisions and go through growth that we are not going to be there to see.
Yeah.
Not our main characters, not like our POV character who it is about, but the other characters who are our friends. We have to accept that sometimes we're going to catch up with them and they are going to be at a different place because we should not expect them to stay stagnant.
And I think this whole series does that very well with it, how it features different characters in each book. We get just enough of their lives and how they change and the way that they jump in and out is really refreshing, because Heroes of Olympus did not do that successfully. Heroes of Olympus made us watch these people when they weren't doing anything interesting at all. Like having a love triangle that goes nowhere. And never resolving this stick still.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Just never resolving the stick still.
Who knows?
Who's to say?
Not me. I don't know. I don't know anything.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a break and then we'll be back to talk about our theme of introspection. All right. We are back. This week's theme is introspection. Where do we want to go first? I feel like it might be easiest to like approach each chapter individually because so many different things happen.
Yeah.
So do you want to just start with the whole like training day montage-y kind of moment?
Sure. Okay.
I'm just really interested in why is Apollo able to just do things again?
I also would like to know. I was theorizing, but I feel like, I don't know, I just have a feeling that we're not going to get great confirmation that's going to make this make sense.
This is a strength and weakness of the Riordanverse. Rick plays loosely with hard and soft magic systems, competing in the same space. So it's sometimes hard when you're like expecting things to be like logical and have results, because like there are things in this world that are like, if A, then B. And like, that's great. But mostly everything is kind of like, gods are gods and things are gonna happen, magic. But we are like meant to believe that Apollo's circumstance is a little more logical in like how he like gains and loses his powers, because up till now he's had these like bursts of godly strength specifically in moments where he like learns, like he like learns about, which is not necessarily a like really hard set thing because like it's subjective, but like they're being character moments in which he is able to access this energy. And like now, I guess we're just meant to believe like he's done it enough times that like he's like gained a little base level about this. It's power scaling in a really like literal sense.
I also think that in the way Apollo gets his powers in earlier books is it not just when he learns something, but when it is specifically a thing he does for someone else, when he is acting and putting someone else's needs, when he is protecting Meg, when he is trying to write, like, but those are the moments where he really like, gets his powers. And I thought about it a lot today because this was that thing that was just on my head. Like, why did it come back on? Like, is it just power scale? Like, what is it? And I think it might be, and I'm just theory, that it works now because it is not him showing off. It is not him being like, I'm the guard of archery and I'm so great. It is he has to be good because the Legion has to learn this for their safety. If he was like he was at Camp Half-Blood and things were wonky, like they'd be like, okay, they wouldn't learn it and people would die. So it is him going up and just not even like wanting to help them and not wanting to show off, not wanting to be like, I'm Apollo, I'm so great. They'll bask in the privilege of seeing me do archery. He's literally like, okay, I guess I got to teach them how to not die. And so it could be that. But yeah, it's just a real obtuse, obscure, vague. Vague is the right word. Vague. Vague.
Yeah. I had a similar thought. I was like, can he suddenly do things? Like, can he suddenly harness godly power when he's doing it for someone else? Like, is that the deal? I just have doubts that I would love to be disproven about, like, the clarity of this explanation when it comes. And, you know what I mean?
Because I feel like we've been before.
The question I think is, I think that this also makes sense to me that why like that would be the case. But the question really is, are we just overanalyzing it? And it's was just kind of a choice. We're going to give Rick more credit than that and say it has to do with helping people. And he's not going to spell it out because he's letting us arrive at our own conclusions and work. And we're going to say it's that because I decided, I guess.
I love that. I think it also, it comes the question of like, how Apollo's powers work. It boils back to like, why is it working like this at all? Because Zeus is the one that took his powers away. So you'd almost assume that Zeus is the one that's like parsing them back bit by bit. Then that wouldn't make sense with, it would suggest that Zeus is like, you need to learn these lessons. And it's like, you know, Zeus would not give a damn about Apollo learning these lessons of being a good person and caring for mortals and caring for his friends and putting other people. He would want him to learn obedience lessons. Is it obedience lessons? Is it every time that Apollo does for others, it is essentially him following an order?
Oh, that's an interesting theory.
I don't like that. I don't want that theory. I don't like
it's interesting. I don't think it's that. I think the problem at the core of this, and I think why it feels so weird, is we're getting Apollo gains powers when Rick, as an author, thinks he deserves to win them. And like that, like, and that makes sense in as a story. However, based on the conceit of why he doesn't have the powers, there is no Rick-like character in the story because Zeus is not that. Because Zeus punishes Apollo in a vindictive way that like actually has nothing to do with... Zeus is not trying to teach Apollo a lesson. Mm-mm. Zeus is punishing Apollo because he has to punish someone for what Octavian did.
Right.
Yeah.
And like, fair. I would... Apollo is not like free from blame about this. However, Apollo was bad separate, like is punished for a crime he didn't do, but was separately also kind of a shit person.
Yeah. Like it was the thing that he's being specifically punished for is the punishment is disproportionate, but what is happening to him is utterly proportionate to what he deserves.
Yeah.
It's just not that. I wonder if it's also Rick trying to convey that though Zeus is the one that stripped him of his powers, perhaps Zeus is not all powerful, almighty, all in control. And that discrepancy when Apollo is getting his powers back is so obviously not something Zeus would be doing that it suggests that there is the belief of the power structure of the Olympians, of Zeus at the top of being the most, is perhaps not necessarily true and is not something that needs to be upheld necessarily, especially in this book when they're so obviously tying, not in these chapters, sorry, but Zeus as abusive and Nero as abusive and anchoring that and perhaps using Apollo and his powers to like suggest maybe this isn't. And it's Apollo talking back to thinking about that and internalizing that in himself that could help bring that to the conclusion.
Well, you know what that makes me wonder if...
Yes, I absolutely do. Let me talk about right now.
It makes me wonder that if the idea that we're working with for the villains of this story is that these emperors become gods because people worshipped them and they harnessed that power to become gods. I think in a similar way, when Apollo is doing stuff for other people, when other people are believing that Apollo is the god, like is the good person, is the god that will help them.
Mm-hmm.
He is able to access those powers in a similar way to how the triumvirate becomes gods, because godliness is a concept based on this separate from like giving someone immortality. Like that is a separate concept than being immortal and being a god are different. And like your godliness is something more attributed by the universe and by we referenced it before, in the American God sense of like belief,
mm-hmm.
and people mm-hmm. believe in you. And when he does something for someone else, people believe in him more. People trust him as a person. And that I think helps him access this historic power that he's had.
I like that a lot.
Give me Tinkerbell. I'm kidding. I just totally ruined it.
It is doing Tinkerbell. Like, clap if you believe fairies.
Yeah, no, exactly.
And speaking of fairies, Apollo really tries to hit on Reyna, huh?
What a segue. I can't believe that was the lead-in.
I thought that was pretty good.
My favorite part of that interaction was the role of the dogs. That are, like, kind of about to kill him the whole time. Like, that's really funny.
Yeah, I like the dog. I realize we skipped the everything that happens in between, but the segue was too good. So we'll come back. But I have a lot of mixed feelings on this.
Right.
But I kind of just, in the end, enjoyed the scene. I think I was worried when I saw it coming that I was like, what, how badly is Apollo going to fuck this up? And I would argue that he does something crazy in a very respectful way. like he's like, hey, he's not even saying like that he really likes Reyna either, which is the most fascinating part of it. It's giving like bye for bye, too, which is like kind of fun. It's like, he's like, I just think that like maybe if I'm your boyfriend, then maybe you won't be sad. And it's like, that was like the worst possible way flat out to ask anyone out, but it's like also kind of endearing.
It's very sweet. And it's also hilarious that he goes that route, because of all people for that to not work on, like, you're talking to Reyna, like, you're trying to put just a little something past her. It's never gonna work. She's gonna know. Yeah. I don't know. It did me laugh. The nerves building up to it, I cannot even explain. because I was like, please God, like, don't put my little favorite through any more stress. I know you're going to have to undergo a lot more for the rest of the book, but I was praying for her. And I don't know, it was endearing, the laughter. I'll say it. Well, was it a little rude? Yes. But was it my favorite part? Absolutely. Because I really think she deserved to laugh.
It was, because I like, when it kept going, I was like, okay, now I feel a little bad for you. But also, it was also, you do something stupid and someone responds that you did something stupid. That's on you.
Yeah, exactly. You should know your actions for what they are. Come on. Nothing's that serious. And like, I don't know. It's also the idea that it felt like Reyna was almost, she doesn't laugh that frequently. And the fact that she was laughing at that moment was kind of, I don't know, it felt like it solidified their friendship more. It was almost like, okay, I trust you. And that's why this is hilarious, you know?
Yeah. Also, it's like an interesting, like, I saw it as an interesting way to continue this arc that like we all kind of thought had wrapped up of like the, and it is something that's like overarching in the series, but like the idea of Apollo discovering humanity and like finding out what it's like to live the human experience. I was like, what an interesting human experience to force him to have, like, in such a specific form of embarrassment.
Yeah.
Be rejected by someone like that. Yeah. And I was like, this is such a fun way to add to this plot of like Apollo finds out what it's like to be a human being.
It is like, I, especially comparing this to the Sybil rejecting him as well.
Yeah.
I think it was just really interesting what it says about Apollo, one, in how he sees his lovers generally. And I think seeing how he approaches the Sybil versus approaches Reyna shows so much growth from him. It also just like really emphasizes Apollo is just such a specific type of bisexual man. And I'm really feeling him in this and really relating to him, that like he likes pretty much any man who will look at him and women who won't. It's like, it's crazy. It's like, he's like, he just sees a hot man and is like, I'm in love with you. And then sees a woman who like can beat him up and is like, I'm in love with you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I get it. I'm also in love with any woman who could beat me up.
Aren't we all?
I think we all should be, frankly.
Probably not Neve.
No, but
like, I know holding the door open.
That's nice. But no.
Why?
No. I also. Oh, no. That was it. Truly it.
Okay. I really like. Onto like the comparing it to this like rate of rejection versus the civil rejection and how Apollo like obviously handles it. I would think so much better from the growth and where he's like, yep, okay, I'm being lapped up. Well, that's a little mean. But at the end of it, he has no resentment to Reyna. Like even when she's laughing, he still thinks she's so beautiful. Whereas in the Sybil's part, he would think everything I loved about her, I hate now because of that bad feeling of being rejected. And when the chapter is over at the end, he thinks about like, okay, when I'm a god again, if I'm a god again, I'm going to rearrange my list of people I need to get revenge on. And Venus is at the top of it. Not Reyna, not the person who rejected him, not the person who just said no because she's not interested. And because that is, he has no ill will. However, Venus is the one who set him up. If Venus had not pulled her thing, he would never have thought twice about talking to Reyna like this. He wouldn't even know her. He would have walked into Camp Jupiter and been like, oh, she's pretty and cool, awesome. And never would have even crossed his mind that like, maybe I'm the one. So I think that's really great that it's a...
Yeah.
It is...
demonstrating.
It is such a cruel thing for Venus to have done. And again, very relatable that that all it takes is someone to plant the seed in Apollo and he's like, maybe I am in love with her.
Yeah. Maybe I...
Maybe I'm not
so real.
And I think we can all feel that a little bit. The other big Reyna moment in... Oh, well, there's two. One is the side note of just her cape. I thought... And the sweater wrap, I thought was just fun.
So good.
But the Reyna...
Someone tell Frank his thing can't... I'm so sorry. I think I'm lagging. I apologize.
Okay.
Someone tell Frank his Raider's cloak can't that. Hers does that because it was a gift from two goddesses when she was fighting Orion. So no, Frank, yours doesn't do that. It's not built for that. It's not standard edition. It was a blessing.
Yeah,
and maybe it could turn into a sweater scarf. I don't know. But the shield thing, that's not standard issue.
I mean, my question with Frank is, does the cloak transform with him? Or is he a bear wearing a cape? Because I would like to believe that.
That one. Yes. Or a swarm of bees. Cowards make us ask the best questions on this podcast.
I agree. Bear also.
A thousand little bees wearing a thousand little capes.
Exactly.
Oh, I was picturing them all carrying a big cape.
Well, I was picturing just one bee.
We're not doing
it. We're not having those conversations, but yeah. Apollo has already addressed it, that it doesn't make sense. That was Rick admitting that it's really confusing.
Don't worry about it.
But Reyna and Talia, this I have very complicated feelings about what is done here. I couldn't tell you what Rick was trying to accomplish.
I don't think he could either.
I wouldn't either.
I liked the way he wrote Reyna's response, though. I was very confused as to, like, why it happened altogether. But I appreciate that, I mean, this statement is about to be like, yeah, the sky is blue. But, like, I appreciate that he did the bare minimum in terms of, like, her response was kind of like, well, she's with the hunters
And also, like, we're friends. Like, I don't want to, like, it was nothing about, like, you know, nothing about, like, but so you think so, but, you know.
Yeah, like, it never was like, oh, I don't like her that way. Or like, I don't like, or I, and it wasn't, I don't like girls.
Yeah. It was, why would I risk messing that up?
Yes.
Yes.
So that's why I appreciated it.
It's your classic I'm in love with my friend quote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the celibacy comment, I have weird, complicated, it felt like an editorial mandate to me. It mm-hmm. felt like a, everyone's been like, are the hunters lesbians? And he was like, oh. I mean, they don't have sex. And we're going to make sure we're going to make sure that that is clear. There's the real talk with this is we don't fucking know. Like, there's no mm-hmm. mythological, like, answer to, like,
yeah,
what the hunter situation was. There are sources that imply that Artemis was hooking up with women and men sometimes, depending on the myth, but generally is a virgin goddess. But, like, what does virginity mean in the context of queerness mm-hmm. is a whole nother question that, like, that's why the celibacy comment feels like he wrote the original I don't want to mess things up line, and then someone was like, a little too much. You're doing a lot of gay already. You know, like, we just gotta give one more excuse.
I feel like Joe and Emmy are meant to demonstrate that,
yeah,
even same-sex couples, it's not just about the men anymore, because it's not 2008 now, gang. We can admit that girls can like girls.
Yeah.
It is any sort of romance or romantic relationships or sexual relationships, because it just seems like Artemis herself in this iteration is not about that. So if you're going to get her goddess powers and run with her, you're going to basically live like her.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the celibacy comment. Celibacy was a very specific word choice. Yeah.
It was. It felt like a heavy word choice for the audience of this book.
I was going to say, this audience feels not like a little young. It just felt like it didn't match up with the demographic.
Because also, like,
why it didn't say relationships.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, they're not allowed to date anyone. Would have done enough. Celibacy,
yeah,
beyond being a very specifically sexual comment, is also has a lot of religious connotations.
Yes.
Which is, I think, why it comes off weird. Because celibacy is typically applied as, like, I'm celibate because my religion, man. Like, that's where you talk about priests or nuns or, like, any monks, and there are a lot of religions that practice celibacy, but it was heavy.
Yeah.
Well, I still am here for maybe a Joe and Emmy plot line in the long run mm-hmm. for Reyna and Talia. We can always hold out our hope when we ever get that Hunter's book.
Oh, I need a friggin' Hunter's book.
It'll happen. He's writing like he is running out of time.
Yep. Well, he's called BB from Monster Donut and get that co-authorship going like we did with Mark. And I think we've got our Reyna Hunter's book.
Exactly, exactly. Okay, we skipped over the middle bit. But I do think the middle bit was also really important. Which is mm-hmm. the entire environmental rally, Fawns, Lavinia. What's Lavinia doing? How Apollo was kind of kidnapped. This doesn't specifically have a ton to do with the introspection concept, but I just wanted to, like, sit with the environmental shit for a moment. I think it was really big for Apollo to understand what was happening. To understand that his problems are not only bigger than him, but bigger than the people he knows. That, like, these problems are affecting entire communities, broadly the whole world. And I think Apollo has learned a lot about interpersonal relationships in the past three books. And now, as we're coming into the end of this series, he's learning a lot more about, I think, humanity as a whole and human culture and broader structures. I think that's a big component of being at in New Rome and at Camp Jupiter, is we have this where he's now in a system. Whereas he's like, Camp Half-Blood is basically anarchy because Chiron can't do anything. And then the way station is like a little commune situation. The whole Burning Maze stuff was mostly just like him and a couple people. Like, it, but now we're like within a system, within a group of people, within competing structures. And I think Apollo is now understanding what that really means.
Very true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's very used to feeling bigger than a lot of problems. But it's the very human kind of like disillusionment that, like, so rarely are people bigger than problems. And he doesn't have godhood to escape that now.
I also really like the sideline where he's thinking about, like, the fauns can just pick up and bounce, but, like, the dryads couldn't, and maybe they could go underground, like the ones in the south had done, but, like, and he has this thought of, like, oh, if I had spent more time talking to about dryads instead of just chasing them around. And, yeah, man, think about how you treat people.
Yeah.
And plants.
And that's why we saw it at the beginning of this episode that this book is a little fluffy. There's not a ton that goes on, but I do think it does successfully. It gives us a lot more time with Apollo just sitting and ruminating on things, which is interesting in a different type of book. Like, I think it has too many things going on in this book, but I do think it is separately, like, interesting. Like, mm-hmm. How much he is spending time thinking about other people and thinking about the things around him, because in the first book and less throughout in the second and third, but he's mostly just thinking about himself in the moment.
The Tyrant's Tomb is the Catcher in the Rye of the Riordanverse.
What a statement.
I know. I was sitting on it for like 30 seconds and I still decided to go with it.
Very loaded.
But like also the idea though that like I would rather like sit in this world while nothing was going on than in the Heroes of Olympus world. You know what I mean?
I completely agree. Like Heroes of Olympus kind of had the opposite problem where like there was so much going on and nothing happening. the further away we get from the books, the less I like them. Just because we're consuming.
There's a reason that my podcast jumped to the Magnus books instead of going straight ahead past Percy Jackson.
And it was a good choice. I'm excited for us to eventually, like a year from now, end up there. Because
it's a great time. It's so fun.
They're very fun. I have not finished them. I read the first two. And I don't remember them super well because it's been a lot.
Read any of them? Excited.
Oh, you're gonna have a great time. Like for real. Take all this out. But no, for real. It is just this talking as Ryan fans for a second. I just reread the first one for Muses, and I was just like, this is so fun and so funny and so interestingly written that I think it is one of the books who just feels like he genuinely had the most fun.
Yeah.
Doing. And it's just a treat to get to experience as someone who's read so much of his work and in the podcast analyzing it so deeply. And sometimes she'd be like, all right, these are just fucking fun sometimes, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. You can tell in the Magnus Chase books that Rick has done a lot to craft his world building skills. And seeing him get to start from the ground up again in a new environment and build with all the lessons he learned from Percy Jackson, Heroes of Olympus, and Cain Chronicles, it's really a treat.
Yeah.
Do we want to...
Lydia has some introspective. Sorry.
I was going to say, do we want to share our sass moments?
I would love...
Let's go first.
I would not be surprised if many of us had this one. So I'm going to go first. Okay. Where have you been? I demanded. Peaches. I felt foolish for asking. Of course he had been Peaches, probably because peaches, and peaches. Love it. I think that's the peak of comedy. That was awesome.
I would like to share too. I'm being selfish this week. I just loved them both. Got to think of new ways if you want to beat the emperors, Meg said. Like me, I'm weaponizing the unicorns. I just thought that was incredible, and I'm excited to see it pay off. I also loved her pin that comes back later. My other moment is I had many things to ask. Where did they keep this truck? Was there a gas station in New Rome? Why had I been hiking so much if it was possible to drive?
Yeah. Mine is Meg emerged from the hackberry bushes. Guys, there's nobody up there, but she froze, taking in the scene, then glanced at the greyhounds for explanation. Don't ask us, their metal faces seemed to say. Mom is never like this. I loved the choice to, like, have them call her mom.
Yeah.
All the narration, I'm like, that's so, like, big dog dopey core.
Yeah. You know? Apollo's interpretation of the dog's expression.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And she's laughing there, like, did you break our mom? That's what I know. Mine is while she is laughing, or no, before she starts laughing and Apollo is freaking out and it's like, oh, she's going to murder me or Meg will help her murder, whatever. Return to camp, the Romans would ask, what happened to Apollo? Who? Reina said, oh, that guy? Oh, no, we lost him. Oh, well, the Romans would reply, and that would be that. Just how it's so funny, the thought of it. And then just how Apollo has just viewed himself as like, people will just forget about me. They'll just get rid of me and no one will care. I'm so insignificant in this world.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so real.
His ego death was crazy. All right. Who do we want to give our offerings for?
Reina.
Yeah, those were clear and easily coming. I'm gonna give mine to Apollo. He did something stupid, but he was appropriately punished for it, and I feel bad that he was set up. My man was set.
He responded with such grace.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And he was really set up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This was a trap.
I'll give mine to Lavinia. She's
work.
Funny.
Oh, true.
In her social justice era.
Yeah.
That's with her. Like, I don't know what it's like to have a little sister, but I feel like I do when I read about her. You know what I mean?
She does have the vibes that she would be your little sister.
Yeah.
It makes sense. Yeah.
Aww.
Wow. An only child can dream. Anyway.
Who do we want to vote off?
Peaches.
So quick and so correct.
Yep. I'm picking Peaches. I was thinking about Venus for a second, but it's Peaches.
No, that's a great call. Peaches, yeah.
If everyone else is hopping on Peaches, I will give one for Venus.
Period. I think it would have been so good if you finished that sentence with also saying
Beaches. I also just can't help but think about the fucking Mario song. Whatever.
I know. Jack Black.
I know.
Okay, I'm singing his song, and it's to the Mario Peaches song.
No.
Should have been.
Yeah. Oh, I hate that movie. We're not going to get into it. We've gotten into it.
Oh, wait. Actually, I remember that.
You know this. I'm curmudgeonly and hated fun and didn't like the Mario movie. No, I liked it. I thought it was a bad movie. But to be clear, I liked it. But I
Yes. I don't think it was a good movie, but I did enjoy watching it. And I don't like how they portrayed Peach. I felt it was too early 2005 girl power.
I agree. It was written terribly.
Yes.
But visually stunning.
Super cute. Just like music was great.
That reminds me so much of famously the movie that I had a wonderful time at, but like it's not a good movie, but like I had just the best time. Ant-Man 3.
I love Quantumania. It's the best Star Wars movie we've had in like a decade.
See, I loved it. And I walked out of the theater with these fools, and they were like, this movie was bad. And I was like,
I was like,
I had a blast. Doesn't mean that it's great, but I had great time.
I thought it was fun. I thought it did cute things. I liked the Marvels.
I
haven't seen it.
The Marvels is good.
I need to see it.
Good. I deserve to do more than it did. And I want a Young Avengers movie.
Our guest is incapacitated off camera.
I care so much about Kamala Khan and the Young Avengers. I know she's not a Young Avenger. She was a champion. Whatever. I care about them both simultaneously. And I just won't get it now because men on the internet decided the movie was bad.
As men on the internet, for real.
I also care a lot about the Young Avengers and Kamala Khan. Mm-hmm. And I'm sad for Amanda Vellani. That might not come to fruition, but I'm happy for myself who likes the source material that I don't have to see people on the internet engage with it incorrectly.
Oh my God. Yeah, I had not considered that. That would have been a nightmare. That would have been very bad. Brayden, do you want to do a Young Avengers podcast? Just a short one. Just a really short one.
We could.
A limited series. No one else has read it. It's just me and my little bubble.
Absolutely. Anytime you want to talk about comics.
Yeah, Brayden has so much knowledge. Lord knows I don't have about it with me, so.
And none of this is what your podcast is about. I should leave.
We get so off topic, girl. No worries. We talk about, like, in quotes, like, Percy Jackson. Like,
yeah.
You're ready to backdoor pilot out of this fandom at a moment's notice.
Oh, 100.
Well, I did 196 episodes, but you will bail.
Oh, I could claim, based off of the things that I talk about on this show, I could claim that this podcast was anything.
Yeah, no, we've covered a lot. And we actually do talk a lot about comics for only one person on it who reads them. All right, folks, that is all for this week. Thank you, Darian, for coming on.
It was a pleasure to be here.
You're welcome back anytime.
Yes. Aww.
Join us next week where we'll be discussing
chapters 25 through 28.
Make sure to follow us on social media. We are at Return to Camp on every platform that matters. And we also have a coffee account and a Rebel store and a website, www.returntocamp.com. Darian, do you want to plug anything before you go?
I bought my mic. I'm up to, because that is why I am here, to reach more people to listen to my show. Obviously, it's my sole purpose. So you want to hear more talk about the Ryanverse, talk about mythology, but are like, you know what? I could do with a break from Greek and Roman. Guess what? This is mythology. We just started talking about the Magnus Chase series, and we were going all in on that Norse stuff. including a wild episode in which I had to dig into what makes Norse mythology such a weird thing to study. Snorri was a madman who really loved poetry, and I respect him for it. And if you don't want that, but you do want to hear more of me, hey, I do another podcast I'm really proud of called Aragon and Back Again, where it's a lot like this, where we approach it more academically, except I speak curse too much, way more than y'all do. So be warned about that, but it's about the Aragon series by Christopher Paolini. And I do want to plug just one more thing, just one more promise. This comes out March 13th, yeah? Fantastic. Yeah. So you, dear listener, all of you should go scroll down into the little links on this episode and just click that button, that link that'll take you to the voting for the Return to Camp Half-Blood polls and all that stuff that's happening, because it's so fun. They put so much work into it. It's the coolest thing I think any of the writing podcasters have ever done. Yes, and I'm including the ones that have gotten actual actors on their podcast. That's cool. This is cooler, I think. So go vote if you haven't yet. I bet you could more than once. I don't know. Maybe. I didn't set it up. But you should vote and participate in it, because it's so awesome. And vote for Hotel Valhalla being the best Ryan-versed adaptation of the myth.
Thank you for doing our job for us.
Yeah.
Incredible work. You did it better than we could ever.
So sweet. Thank you so much.
So weird.
Yeah.
Bye, listeners.
Have a good week.
Have a good See you next week.
Is he like bullying them?
But he was mad to you.